All right. So today at the wonderful Oak City Comic Con.
Give it up.
Yes, good. I like this. The enthusiasm makes me happy. We have a panel going on in this room right now, which is quote unquote 12 o'clock.
We're loose doing 12.
Loose 12.
If you're hearing this from outside, come in.
Yeah. Today we're going to be doing a panel called New Age of All Age Comics. Your moderators today are myself and my friend here. We are from Name Redacted Podcast.
Hi.
My name is Alexander Fulmer.
I'm Colin Norris.
And with us, we actually have two of the people who work on Princeless, which is from Action Lab Comics for their all-age section. And we're going to let them introduce themselves and talk to you a little bit about what they do before we get it kind of ramping up into the conversation. Go ahead, guys.
My name is Jeremy Whitley. I am the writer and creator of Princeless. I have written six volumes of Princeless now, five of which are actually out. The fifth one is in the middle of coming out, as well as our spinoff series, Pirate Princess. I've also written a bunch of issues of My Little Pony for IDW, and I've recently done a couple of short stories for Marvel.
Very cool. Very cool. And?
Hi, I'm Alex Smith. I drew this issue of Princeless, this single issue. I've got a bunch of stuff coming out probably end of this year, beginning of next year, some stuff with Jeremy, hopefully, and I did a study skills guide that was very, very small press. I have a couple copies at my table down here if anybody wants to come take a look. And that's pretty much me.
The end.
That's it.
Short,
I do
sweet.
What he tells me to do.
End of intro.
Yeah, there you go. So today a lot of what we're going to be talking about is the basically new generation of all-age comics, which means we'll probably refer back to the older stuff that's considered all age and kind of show you reference points and let you see how it's evolved and what it's becoming and what it will become. So probably to start it out, what we're going to do is have the two guys from Princeless tell you a little bit about what goes into making the comic book so you can kind of get a reference point as to how the thought process goes for creating something that's all ages. So Jeremy, you want to take it away?
Yeah, sure. So my big thing is I was getting into comics. I was writing stuff and doing my own self-publishing and small press stuff. And I was actually getting ready to have a daughter. And it got to the point where I was thinking about sharing comics with my daughter and how I wanted to sort of bring her up with comics the way I'd been brought up. And I was looking around for stuff that I wanted to share with her that was coming out. And unfortunately, most of the comics that I was seeing at that point, even the ones I was reading, fit into one of two categories, either no women in it at all, or women portrayed, unfortunately, poorly. And obviously, those were not things I was really interested in my daughter reading. So I kind of decided to set out and start putting together this book that was what I was looking for, and that, you know, as I was making it, I found a lot of other people were looking for, where she could see a character who was, you know, her own hero, had her own agency, that this was her story rather than her being a sort of, you know, tertiary character to another story. And in addition to that, I wanted to have a character that looked like her. My daughter is a young woman of color. There's very little representation in comics for women of color, period. And what's out there is kind of rough for the most part. I started putting that together and, you know, early on sort of I had the idea of meeting, young girls kind of where they are, which is, in the Princess Isle. You know, there's you can make ideas of stuff you want girls to read all day long, but if, like, they don't see it and go, yeah, that's something I recognize, that's something I'm interested in, then, you know, you can only, there are only so many kids that you can force feed a story to. And so, you know, I wanted to hit that sort of in-between place where, you know, I saw a lot of my wife's younger, you know, cousins and nieces and stuff who were really getting into, like, you know, at that point, Princess and the Frog had just come out, and Tangled was, you know, still sort of in previews. So I started working on that, and, you know, 5 years later, here we are.
Yeah, cool. Very cool. On the art or on the like artistic side of it, is there something that you kind of look at as being a template to go by, or something that you kind of take to heart as this is what I need to accomplish with an all-age book?
Yeah, I think you have to approach it in a very different way. Especially like most of the guys that approached me for work before Jeremy did, like I'm really good at drawing pretty people.
Yeah.
So I get a lot of skeezy type stuff coming at me, and I'm like, oh, I don't want to necessarily do that. Like, I grew up on Chris Claremont X-Men. Like, I think of women as people. So, you know, like like he was saying, if the characters don't have agency or a character of their own, I'm not really interested in drawing them.
Yeah.
My interest in the new all ages comics comes directly from him. Like, I was a fan of his Princeless before I met him, and that's kind of how I got into this. But with this specific issue, like, this whole issue is basically two teenage girls in their underwear swimming in a lake. And as an artist, I had to come up with a way to draw that and keep it all ages and keep it from becoming something adult oriented that people are gonna like. I had to keep that sort of men's gaze out of it. And what I looked at as inspiration for that was early issues of New Mutants. Bob Layton.
Is that Bob? Was that his run?
Early New Mutants.
Bob McLeod. Thank you.
McLeod.
Okay. So Bob McLeod, who's great. If you ever run into him at a convention, he's awesome. But he was really good at taking moments like that. Like, there's an early issue, like issue 3 or 4, where Moonstar is just like, she's completely naked through half of the issue, but it never feels creepy. Like, it never, like, in, like, he was really good at putting teenage characters in those kinds of situations without making it something that we were leering at, even as teenage boys reading it. So when I approached this, like, a lot of that was about finding out how to pose the characters. Like, Adrian's sort of undergarments were canonically like just like a white frilly thing. So I had to kind of, I wanted it to look real, like I wanted it to be clinging, but I didn't want it to be sexualized. So like I did a lot of different sketches and things trying to get that. And you know, another thing is just keeping it fun. You know, I lightened up my style a little bit for this book. I went a little more exaggerated with my facial expressions than I might usually do, which I'm probably going to keep doing because I just like it.
It's fun.
Yeah,
so I'm not going to stop.
Yeah, I'm just not going to stop. Which is crazy because the next like 3 books I'm working on are all horror books. So
awesome.
It's crazy. Yeah.
You're on the panel with the right dudes.
We'll talk after.
But yeah, this is so. And you know, it was neat. Like, I don't know. I lost my train of thought. This is what I did. It was good. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think to what Alex was saying, I think sort of the key with both Princeless and Pirate Princess as I've been writing them, and to a large extent with My Little Pony as well, is letting the female characters in the stories be able to have fun. Like, as you may have heard, girls want to have fun.
I heard that's all they want to do, actually. That is singularly.
Well, they just want to have fun.
They just. I mean, some of them don't, but most of them do.
But some, if not all, want to have fun.
Yeah, a large percentage.
Okay. I think as middle-aged white men, we are perfectly qualified to speak for all of women.
Girls just
to,
want.
We are on 75 years of comics.
Right. Yeah.
Do you guys think it's, you know, when you commit yourself to writing an all-age book that doesn't talk down to the reader, doesn't play to the typical stereotypes of an all-ages book, like Betty and Veronica, where, you know, they spend most of their time arguing about who wants to kiss Archie. Do you find a lot of more challenge in that, or does it just kind of come naturally because this is what you want to see out of an all-ages book?
I think for the most part it comes naturally. It's sort of, it's easy to do, especially when you write a good portion of the story not having any male characters, and they don't drive all the action, when you have the female characters actually driving the action, which is, you know, remarkably and unfortunately rare. then a lot of those problems just sort of take care of themselves. Like when, you know, it's when the love triangle is not the driving force of the story, then all of the stories are not about the love triangle. And, you know, it's, I don't know, it's the only way I know how to write is like characters that have other things going on in their lives than just, you know, one or two dudes.
So basically you've removed the forest so you can see the trees in a way. Like, you know, you've removed all the ancillary garbage that comes along with modern storytelling, like a love story, a star-crossed lover story, or anything like that, and it just sort of, there it is. There's the story.
It kind of flows naturally and a little bit more true to life.
Yeah.
And in the weirdest way when you're talking about a thing with dragons.
But yeah, I mean, it's a lot of... It's weird for me because I'm writing a, you know, kids adventure book, but I really write in like a dialogue driven kind of way. So like my Princeless passes the Bechdel test on like every page because there's just not dudes there that they're talking about. Like, and it's remarkably easy when you're not like trying to start from a weird place. Mm-hmm. When you're just like, all right. There's two girls going on an adventure, and what are they talking about? Like, so there's a lot of, you know, small talk and chit chat, and then, you know, it seems realistic because I'm not trying to cram something else into there.
Yeah,
I think like starting from a point where instead of thinking to yourself, what would this girl character do? Like, just get your head out of that. Like, what would this character do?
Yeah.
What is this character's motivation? And it shouldn't matter if it's a female character or a male character or anything else. That's the character, and they have these motivations, and those motivations don't have to be based on their boyfriend or their girlfriend or whatever. Like, they can be a dog that's in love with pizza, you know, and it doesn't matter if it's a boy or a girl.
I'm in love with pizza. What a coincidence.
Yeah, like,
relatable.
Exactly. That's like everyone loves Same. Pizza. So. Neil Gaiman says, like, about writing for young adults and children, is that children are not stupid.
No,
and
they're incredibly intelligent.
They're not, like, making something too scary for kids is kind of hard. Like,
Coraline is terrifying.
It's horrifying.
I still get weird, like, jitters walking by my DVD shelf and looking at Coraline. I'm just like, I don't want to watch you. You make me uncomfortable, I don't like it.
Coraline up there with, like, I've seen it once and that was enough, and that's up there with, like, Requiem for a Dream. Like, I'm good. I don't need that in my life.
Yeah.
GB's all day.
I can't even look at my refrigerator. It's been 15 years and I still can't look at
it. I still get nervous around buttons.
Yeah.
Yeah, I read his short story. Well, I guess it's not a short story. It's kind of like a novella. The Ocean at the End of the Lane, and that's another one that's just like, it's so creepy. Like, it's ostensibly like a YA kind of story, you know, taking place from a kid, right. And it's just like, there's stuff in there that after I was reading it, I was like, I don't know if I can go to sleep tonight. Like, I'm gonna go watch some Nightmare on Elm Street to calm down. Like,
You guys remember the versions of Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark that we had when we were kids?
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't know. Like, those... My kids will not even look at them. Like, I have...
My mother is here. Speaking of Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, I brought that book home from school, and I was so scared to fall asleep because I thought I was going to die. And she can attest to that. And it's still in libraries. And I'm so...
That's
like
a witness.
I think that it's important. I think it's important to not play down to your audience. And
that's absolutely that is the key to making a good all ages book. I mean, I don't write as much as Jeremy, obviously, and he's much better and faster than I am at it. But it's don't talk down to your audience. And with an all ages book or all ages story of any kind, I think the key to that is all ages. Like, I think I could give Princeless to my grandmother, and she would easily find something to enjoy about it. Yeah.
It's about making it accessible. And I actually wanted to ask and bring this up. The all-ages thing now, it is really moving into more of a brand new era of it. And how much do you guys think that what's driving a lot of the storylines in it and a lot of the things that, you know, come across as being, I guess, like morals and things to look at from I guess, a moral perspective is driven by kind of the newer idea behind a more liberal and accepting culture and people wanting to be more inclusive and get rid of like the social outcast outcast thing and this more civil rights movement-y stuff. Because I feel like I see it show up more and more and more in all ages things. And I think it's a great thing. And I think it's a good thing to put out there to let everyone see that this is what the world is. And comics should portray what the world is the best it can. Do you guys kind of like go along with that lines? Does that help you drive your stories?
I think, you know, in my case, you know, my main protagonist in Raven is gay. And that was a thing that I was really interested in having out there, is not just a, let's say, gay lead, but like a, you know, girl who's 16 and is sort of coming to terms with this as well. And I think you see that in a lot of the stuff that's coming out, for the same reason that like the kids who were, you know, growing up in the 60s and were writing in the 80s, like there's a lot of, you know, dealing with race in comics. And, you know, I think those were kids who wanted that kind of thing or didn't have that kind of thing and think they would have benefited from it from that at that age. And, you know, I think you're seeing a lot of that from, you know, people who have grown up dealing with or being friends with people who are dealing with those kinds of issues, you know, whether it be race or sexuality or gender or whatever, that like there's a like kids, you know, even young kids and especially teenagers, people going through high school are like, they don't get to not deal with issues because they're adult issues. Like, you know, it's, if anything, maybe worse because I don't know how many people remember middle school, but like,
oh,
middle
school
sucked. Middle school sucked. And I'm a straight white guy. like, I can only imagine like just amping that up to, you know, and more degrees and getting to that. Like, so yeah, like kids don't have the option of not dealing with stuff. And like, when you recognize that and they can actually see themselves in comics and in stories, it's, you know, it's empowering in ways that like, you don't even necessarily, that doesn't have to be the driving force of the story. Just having that representation there is important.
Yeah.
I think like you're talking about Raven, like the fact that she's gay is not the point of the story. It's just a thing. Like, it's not the focus. She just happens to be.
Yeah,
I think that's super important to think about that. Like in 1950, if you had put a gay character in a comic book, everyone would have lost their mind over it. And if you'd put a gay teenager into a kid's comic book, yeah. Like, if you'd done that, then they would have been like, this is terrifying. Like, why would you do this to children? And
there's always that. Weird. You always hear those stories about guys pitching characters of color, especially like in the 80s and 90s for comics or TV, and then whoever's in charge of the editor, the executives will say, well, I thought this was supposed to be for everyone, which is ridiculous. Like, I'm a 35-year-old straight white man, and one of my absolute favorite characters is a 16-year-old Muslim girl, Kamala Khan from Ms. Marvel. She's great.
Yeah, she's fantastic.
I look forward to that comic all the time. I have nothing in common with that character, but she's delightful.
Yeah,
it's delightful.
Like, you read that comic, and it's very quickly like Ms. Marvel, it's like, from a surface level, I have nothing in common with her, but that's sort of the point of the book, is that like you start reading it and it's like, oh yeah, I have everything in common with this character. Like, I too am a disappointment to my family. I too have an awkward time with people at school. Like, that's well, I don't go to school, but that makes it even more awkward.
I just walk around to school and make things weird for people. I'm like, hey.
Yeah. That's when it's always awkward at school when you're a 31-year-old bearded man just walking around.
What are you doing here? I'm just trying again, dude.
Miss Reynolds, the hobo's back.
I didn't do it right the first three times. I mean six times. I don't know. I'm just back. Whatever.
I'm trying to live every Adam Sandler movie. So.
just let me know when you get to the ridiculous six, so I can just.
So
in terms of golf, so that's gonna take a while.
So when you guys were kind of like looking to work on all ages things, were there any specific more current or older all age comics that you kind of drew inspiration from or looked to at as being like kind of a bellwether or a standard? Oh, there's that pause that I was waiting for. I knew it was coming.
I can direct you right back to New Mutants all the way up until Rob Liefeld touched it.
No comment.
But that's a great comic. If you're an outcast kid of any kind, those characters are so relatable and so well written, by Claremont and Simonson both. It's one of my all-time favorite things, and that's easily a touchstone for me, writing and drawing.
Yeah. It's actually funny. I the thing that got me into comic books was actually in my 20s. They got me really into collecting and being a bigger part of the comic book culture. It wasn't all ages comic. It's Mouse Guard, actually.
Mouse Guard's great.
Which if anyone in the audience has not checked out Mouse Guard, you're doing it wrong. It's fantastic.
Especially if you grew up reading Redwall and Watership Down and stuff like that.
It's like if Redwall got real serious. And then somebody decided to do the most amazing artwork on top of your brain.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
It's super. And the guy who does it, Peterson, he's fantastic. He is one of my favorite people when I go to cons, and he's super nice to talk to. So if anybody gets a chance, I'm pretty sure he's actually going to be at Heroes this year. If you get a chance to go talk to him and check out Mouse Guard, you absolutely should, because it is a fantastic all-ages book. And everyone in the room should check it out for sure.
Yeah, Mouse Guard is really good. Somebody that really stands out for me is Dwayne McDuffie.
Yes.
I grew up with Dwayne McDuffie, not knowing I was growing up with Dwayne McDuffie. I loved Static Shock. Static Shock was awesome. And that was, that was a character I related to, because, he was poor. His parents were poor. That's my life. I don't relate to Tony Stark in the least.
You mean you're not an alcoholic billionaire?
No.
Oh, okay.
Not yet. I mean, we're getting there.
I'm quitting this pen.
Yeah, I got to write a lot more comics. but
just start.
Yeah, going. Between that and his the Justice League cartoons that he was writing. Along with the rest of that crew, Justice League Unlimited is just
so fun.
It's some of the best stuff, and it's just so. I watch it now, and I'm like, yeah, this was really good. Yeah. Which, having grown up in the 80s and 90s, is a weird experience for me, because I've rewatched a lot of the cartoons I loved and gone,
oh god,
don't do that.
I've been rewatching X-Men.
Don't do that.
Yeah,
the Justice League cartoons do hold up though.
But Justice League Unlimited is not just good.
Yeah. What she said.
Yeah, it is. It's not just good. It's not good for a cartoon. It's just
good.
It's just good superhero stories.
What's great about that is it's a Cartoon Network, so they didn't have to deal with standards and practices. So standards and practices assumes that your children are stupid and sensitive.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think
you can't Wolverine cannot actually use his claws. Like all those old Ninja Turtles cartoons we used to have, they just had a crossover episode in the new Nickelodeon cartoon, and the turtles from the new cartoon were like, what is wrong with you guys? You don't even use your weapons to fight. Or it's like, I mean, we're not dumb.
Yeah, I think...
walk around with a stick.
I think, there are episodes of that Justice League series that, I'm a kid who grew up on Marvel stuff, and I like Batman, all right, but I was never into Superman. And then I watched that cartoon, and I was like, "Yes, Superman is the best!" I relate so strongly to that episode of Justice League where it's Christmas and Superman is super excited about Christmas.
Oh, that's adorable!
He makes his parents wrap all of his presents in lead so that he can't see what they are.
Yeah, it's so great.
I know this is dangerous for you, mom and dad, but really, I need this.
And also the episode of Justice League when I'm trying to remember, but it's the episode where Batman is confronting the Royal Flush Gang, and one of them. Is on a timeline, is about to basically die.
Ace, she's about to explode
and take the whole
city with her.
And he just sits there and waits with her. It's just little moments
She's sitting on a swing, waiting for the entire city to just boom around her, and Batman's just like, it's cool, dude.
They fix it, but she's still gonna die. And it's just those moments of it's not talking down to anyone. No. It's just very plaintive, and it's still those little moments that are, I don't know. I'm rambling. For everybody. Sorry.
The Mad Love adaptation that they did.
Oh, it was so
yes.
good.
It's like
very good.
Crazy that they even did that.
Yeah. I think we're going to open it up to questions. We had one in the back. Do we still have that? No, apparently been answered.
Well was, maybe. It was on the topic of going back and rewatching some of the things that you watched.
Yeah.
Now as an adult when you were a kid. Not that it was that great when it initially came out anyway, but
we thought it was.
I rewatched the movie version of He-Man with Dolph Lundgren.
It's Masters of the Universe is so good.
Sir, you are absolutely wrong. That movie is amazing.
I mean,
for
they did
all
a,
of the reasons you hate it, that's why it's fantastic. Everyone go watch that movie.
They had three sold out screenings of it at NC Comic Con. Plus Courtney Cox, come on!
Oh my gosh, Skeletor?
This
is incredible!
Just Frank Langella just
chewing the scenery.
This is like you're sitting here talking to people who had an entire episode about how much we love crap movies.
Yeah.
Like Turbo Kid made me have
Turbo
like,
Kid is not crap.
Oh, but it's intentionally crap, and it gave me this euphoric like, oh my god, everything's perfect in the world.
Do you know what other movie is great. Like that you don't want to believe me, but X-Men Origins: The Wolverine.
Oh, it's so cringy, good. Man.
It is. So
I walked
ridiculous.
Out of that movie.
Yeah, just I'm sitting next to him and he screams at the screen. He stands up when Deadpool gets revealed with like his mouth stitched shut and he goes,
"Done."
No, and he just walks out.
Done.
I'm over it. I'm done. And I was like, "That's my friend."
I made my wife watch that movie because I hated it so much. I was like,
on the hate,
like. The first half hour, I was like, no, it's. She was like, this is okay so far. I was like, no, the first half hour is actually fine. Here comes the part where he throws his motorcycle at a helicopter.
The best part? What are you talking?
It's like a marker. It's
yeah.
And here's where it turns into schlock.
Like the writer's room for that movie, they're just sitting there and. Like, they just write themselves into a corner, and somebody goes, man, it's a shame that Gambit can't climb walls.
Well, guess what? He can now.
And then the guy, like Rich across the table's like, or can he?
We had a question right here.
Cranial trauma amnesia. That's my favorite.
You guys talking about the Wolverine movie. I remember that scene where, he looks at his new claws and, clings them together. That was, the worst CGI in that movie.
Yeah, it was terrible. It was terrible.
And then he cuts the sink, and you're just like, "That's dude, he was moving less than 1 mile per hour." Just.
From a physical business perspective, that's a good bit. I'm sorry. I will always love stupid slapstick comedy. Yeah, it was great. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Them and you guys just keep pointing out reasons why this movie is good.
Yeah, it was all good.
Don't get me started on that.
That show...
You're making me so sad, dude.
That show's not about fighting, bro. That show is about finding pizza before the girls come over for the slumber party.
Yeah, because they'll eat all your pizza.
That's a good that's a good example of when all ages doesn't work.
Yeah.
And that's
you're teen, so wrong.
Well, Teen Titans did a really good job when it first came out of being something that was accessible. And even as
It towed the line.
Well, as a young adult, I watched it. In my late teens, I was like, no, I can sit through. I can tolerate this. This is not bad. And then Teen Titans Go came out and I was like, what is this? Is this Teletubbies for DC? Get out of here. This is ridiculous.
That also says a lot that you said, I can tolerate this. It's not bad.
It wasn't good, but
you still watched it.
There's a standard, and see, that standard is low.
The thing is, between those two things, we had Young Justice, which was amazing.
Oh, so good.
Teen Titans Go can't stand up to what came between.
Oh,
yeah, Young Justice is amazing, and it's an all-ages, it's the ideal all-ages thing. It's basically 80s X-Men in
really
animated form.
And after two seasons, they were like, it's too good. Get rid of it.
We can't sell toys. Cancel it. Any other questions?
What are some independent publishers you would recommend for all
these
comics?
I've got a big one, but you guys...
Action Lab Comics?
Action Lab.
Action Lab all day.
Action Lab.
Yeah, Action Lab...
it's got a Labrador with a jetpack for the logo.
He used to be a cow.
He's an Action Lab.
So Action Lab puts out Princeless. They also do Nutmeg, Skyward,
Hero Cats. Molly Danger.
Another list, because five is a good number. sorry. Third World Press is another one that's good. They did Stuff of Legend and Intrepid Scapegoat, which I really like, but nobody else.
Brian Smith, who is a personal friend of ours, does those, and absolutely check those out.
Yeah.
Those are both fantastic.
Boom Studios has some good licenses.
Boom has a
IDW
couple of
them. Well.
IDW. Archie is coming into its own with a lot of its stuff it's doing for all ages.
Mine has Lumberjanes right now, which Lumberjanes is...
Yeah, Lumberjanes is fantastic.
My personal pick for all ages comics publisher is Arkea. Arkea has Rust, and they have...
Rust is fantastic.
Rust is a beautiful book. Just... like one of the most well-produced like imageries I've seen, and that kid's adorable.
That's the tiniest tuxedo mask.
That is awesome.
You look great. Anyway,
but, so Arkea, they also publish Mouse Guard. They have a bunch of other really fantastic all-age books. It is absolutely one that I would recommend. But all of the ones that we've said, you guys should go out and check out publishing from them.
Your LCS local comic shop probably has like a wall. Mm. Just dedicated, like most of them do now. They just have a section that's all ages. Or
if they don't, set them on fire.
Yeah.
Tell them they need it.
And tell them to stock Princess. Princeless. It's been a long morning, and it's only noon.
Yeah, my daughter, she reads Lumberjanes. She's a big fan of Squirrel Girl, which comes out from a little comics company called Marvel.
You may have heard of them.
And there's also this tiny publishing company called Scholastic that makes...
let me write that down.
That made a two... They have a small graphic novel line, but it happens to include like the best-selling comics ever, which are Smile and Sisters. We're both written and drawn by Raina Telgemeier and are amazing, and your kid may already have them because they're everywhere.
Those color editions of Bone.
They've got color editions of Bone.
And if you guys have not picked up all of the old editions of Calvin and Hobbes, you're doing it wrong.
Because
they're all good. They all still hold up. And if you haven't read them, you're making huge mistakes, and fix your life immediately.
I think we've got time for one more question.
Right here. You've been waiting patiently.
So I have a question about comparing comics that are like, politically correct and have all sorts of characters versus all white men, cisgender, et cetera. How marketable are they? Because I'm assuming that there are there are niche audiences which are like really craving the politically correct stuff.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, there's a big part of that actually that's covered in certain publishers like Oni Press. Oni Press straight up says in their submissions, they're like, if your book is not inclusive with diversity, don't give it to us. We don't want it. Yeah. Like, we legitimately, it's part of their statement. They're like, we don't want a bunch of white male characters. Don't give it to us. We're gonna just tell you no. So a lot of it has to do with your publisher.
Yeah.
But you guys have more on that?
I think there is definitely a perception there of there not being an audience or being just a niche audience. And I think, you know, that was something I had some trouble with when I was first pitching Princeless. But the Princeless has definitely found an audience, and I would hesitate to say that they're a niche audience and compared to like what other all ages books are doing. Mm. Because, you know, I have a lot of, you know, doing conventions and stuff, I get a lot of parents that come up and they're like, you know, my son loves this book. You know, my daughter read this book and then I picked it up and now I've read all of the books and things like that. I think it's largely a question of low exposure as compared to marketability. Because I could spend all of the time and energy of all of the people that work at Action Lab to promote this book, and we would never have the same sort of like representation in the media that Marvel gets from sending out a press release.
Yeah.
Having written a couple of books at Marvel, like doing literally everything I can to promote this book, I had a short story come out at Marvel, and like people just started contacting me, and I was like, is this? I don't know how to do this.
And that's coming and that's coming from a published author's standpoint. Yeah. Like, and so that showed you the perspective of the reach.
Yeah. You had another question. We actually have just a little bit more time. What's your question?
Okay, so I just at the beginning of the year signed my first book contract for
a
children's book.
Yay!
Congratulations.
Like, I didn't even know how they'd like feel if like they knew I was if my publisher knew I was like running around cosplaying medic from Team Fortress 2 right now. Like, do you guys ever feel constrained by like what parents might get angry or your publisher might get angry that you're like
you'd never be able to do anything. Like if, nope. if you sit and think about that, like you're just gonna sit still and do nothing because in our social climate right now, like people are just out there like I mean, there's plenty of people who are rightfully offended by things, but there are lots of people who are looking to be offended, so they're going to find something.
I don't like that.
Concerned like, so trolls are everywhere.
You know, do your best. Yeah. Be true to your story, and you know, be yourself. Don't try to live your life walking on eggshells.
Yeah,
you know?
I think.
Don't go murdering hobos on the weekend.
No, that's a mistake.
I think the biggest thing is I don't stress about staying all ages. Like I have done all ages stuff, but like I do like to stay on message, which is like if I have like the values that I espouse in Princeless are not made up. Like those are things I care about, and so like I don't make other books that contradict that. You know, when I get a chance to pitch something for another publisher, either I pitch them something that like I would want to do, or I don't pitch them stuff because, you know, there are certain publishers that I look at their stuff and I'm like, oh, not for me. And, you know, that's fine. It's fine that, I won't name names, other companies exist that do their own thing. But, yeah, just
do it.
Step back.
Name drop.
It's actually like the big thing is that a lot of people do run into this, and I'm sort of in that same vein as you right now where I'm not sure what's appropriate and what's not because I have two different stories that are being looked at by indie publishers who do children's books, and they're both children's stories. And I walk around looking like this, and I run an explicit podcast. So you have to come to terms with that, but you have to be who you are. But also, there's this awesome thing where you can go as a different name.
Nom de plume.
Yeah, like you don't have to go as your name. So I have a lot of friends who actually write for things that are incredibly inappropriate, and they put their pseudonym on it and not their real name on it. So you really have to balance and toe that line to where it's appropriate for you and what you're doing, and you got to make that judgment call on your own. But you know, like, don't go around con floor hitting somebody with a stick all day that you don't know. Don't just walk up to someone and be like, I don't like you, and punch them in the face.
But also don't be afraid to go back to, at the end of the day, go out and have a beer with your colleagues.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
be you.
If anybody's going to get mad about that, maybe you don't want them as a fan.
people who like you are going to like you.
Exactly.
People who aren't.
Protesters sell books, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Period. That's true. Yeah. Dogma sold a bunch of tickets.
No kidding.
So don't be afraid to be you. Yeah. You know, always act within the bounds of moral decency, yeah, of course. Unless relativism is your thing, and that's fine. but just be yourself.
Guys, this is a fantastic panel. Thank you
guys.
You guys are a fantastic audience. We have two awesome guests.
So Jeremy, Alex, tell everybody where they can find you on the floor.
Yeah, give them your booth numbers, if you know them.
I think I'm at 438.
I'm at 3-something.
So just
choose your own adventure.
So just meander around the 300s. I'm Colin Norris.
I'm Alexander Fulmer.
You can find us at www.nameredactedpodcast.com. And at 4 o'clock...
We are also going to be posting every single panel we do today. We did one earlier that was actually web to print comics. So if you want to check that one out, you can. This one will be posted at the end of the day. And we also at 4 o'clock... Oh, this one's getting posted sooner.
No. And we are explicit...
We are explicit tag.
Today...
None of the things that we post today will have explicit tag, or they'll have the explicit tag, but nothing we have is explicit, so it is for all ages.
Yeah.
But please don't let your younger kids listen to our regular content. We're just letting you know ahead
please
of time.
Please don't do
that. But we also have a podcast tutorial coming up at the end of the day at 4 o'clock
in this room. So if you're interested,
please come back and join us.
Come in.
Once again, give a hand to the guys who are sitting here with us from Princeless. And you guys have a wonderful day. Thank you for coming in and sitting in.
Hail you guys. Thank you so much.